Coast to Coast AM. Hi, everybody. Connie Willis here. We are broadcasting live from the 840 WHAS studios, iHeartMedia. Wow. Louisville, Kentucky. That's where we're broadcasting live from tonight. Last time I was on, we were out of Philadelphia. And what we're doing is talking with Stan Gordon today, and it's about if Bigfoot are extraterrestrial or interdimensional. And if you want to find out more about Stan, go to coasttocoastam.com. And you're going to find out all about him. So any of the people you ever hear have discussions and talk with George or anybody else that's online here with us, that's where you can find out the information. And he's got a couple books, Silent Invasion, the Pennsylvania UFO Bigfoot case book, Really Mysterious Pennsylvania. And you can also check him out on stangordon.info. But just go to coasttocoastam.com. And that's where you're going to find out anything you want to know about him, myself, or anybody else, and all these stories, and post your own stories up there, too. I love that. Hey, we've got open calls later on, but we'll be back with Stan Gordon next here on Coast to Coast AM. Connie Willis on Coast to Coast AM, talking with Stan Gordon, getting to the bottom of, is Bigfoot something other than flesh and blood? And Stan, you said you have a doozy of a story. You've already given us some neat little things to connect the Bigfoot with possibly being extraterrestrial or interdimensional. So what is the doozy? Bring it on. We're ready for you.
Well, the case that really led me to realize that there was a lot more of this phenomenon we had any idea of occurred October 25th of 1973 during this major wave of UFO and Bigfoot activity. My hotline had been very busy for that 24-hour period of that day with many UFO reports coming in from throughout the state. But it was a phone call I received at 10:30 that night that really, really brought us into a very interesting event. At 10:30, I got a call from the state police barracks at Uniontown, PA, from a trooper who had just came back from investigating this UFO incident. Talked to him. He indicated to me that he thought there was a good possibility that something was still up in the pasture, and he wanted me to get a team up there as soon as possible. Well, Fayette County, Uniontown, was a pretty good distance away, and it was already late at night, but we did. We assembled a team, and we checked out our radiation equipment. We checked out our other equipment, our recorders, and we got up there in the early morning hours. So the basics of the story is that it was around 9 o'clock that evening, and this is a little rural community few miles outside of Uniontown in Fayette County, Pennsylvania. And about 15 people in this around this rural community were observing this object. It's about as big as a barn. It's a spherical object, bright red, like a big ball. It's about 100 feet off the ground, and it appears to be slowly moving downward. And the story focuses on this fellow who I call Steve. He was going out to visit his father's farm where this was taking place, and they're heading down the road, in this farm road, and they see this object. Well, he pulls off and goes over to a neighbor's house to get a different vantage point, and this object appears to be coming down in the pasture on his dad's farm. So there were two young boys over at that house where he was, and they decided to go with him to go up to investigate what was up in the field. Before they did that, he went over to his dad's farm, and he grabbed a .30-06 and a handful of ammunition, which included two tracers.
I'm sure.
So they started proceeding down the farm lane. It's, you know, late at night. It's dark. And the dogs in the distance are going crazy. They hear this, like, high-pitched whining sound, getting louder as they're getting closer, and also what sounds like baby crying sounds. So as they're getting closer, these sounds are getting louder. And they angle the truck with the headlights on at an angle so they can see a path that go up towards the pasture, and they notice that it looks like something's trying to drain the power of the headlights. They had never experienced that before, but the headlights were dimming. It was very unusual for them to experience that. And as they get up to the top of the pasture, they're standing there in amazement because about 250 feet away, this object is on the ground right above it. But now it's not a complete sphere. It's a half a sphere. It's like a bright white hemisphere, like a dome. It's, again, right on the ground or right above the ground. And it's illuminating the whole area. This thing's about 100 feet or more in diameter. And the whole area is luminous. And they can't believe what they're seeing. So they're standing there studying this thing, trying to figure out what it is, when their attention is drawn about 75 feet away. There's a barbed wire fence. So those fence poles and this barbed wire fence about 6 feet tall. Well, what's interesting is they notice these two tall figures, one behind the other, slowly moving in their direction along the barbed wire fence. The one in front, there was two figures. The one in front was at least 8 feet tall. The one behind it's about 7 feet tall. And, of course, they're trying to figure out what are we looking at. Their first thought is they've got to be bear. But as they look at these things, they realize these are unlike anything they've ever seen before. So these things are covered with long, dark, matted hair. The hair is hanging down off the arms and off the body. These things have no neck. The arms are extremely long. They're almost down to the ground. They're making these crying sounds. They have glowing green eyes. The eyes appear to be about the size of a 50-cent piece. And they're self-luminescent, glowing green. And they're making that baby crying, whining noise. Uh-huh. Well, the one in front, it appears to walk almost in a pattern that when it reaches the next fence post, it kind of hesitates and then waits for the one behind it to catch up, which was a little shorter.
That's interesting.
And then it continues moving on. Well, the one boy is already terrified, and he's screaming, and he runs out of the field. And the other kid is yelling to the fellow with the rifle, "Shoot him, shoot him." So the guy finally takes a shot, and he fires his first shot, which is a tracer. So the fellows out there at hunt just know you're going to get that luminous trail, and then he fires a second tracer. So what happens is very interesting. The reaction is when he fires that second tracer, the largest of the two creatures leaves out this loud whining, crying sound and reaches out as though to grab at that tracer. And the moment it does that, the object in the field disappears. It doesn't take off. It just vanishes. And all that brilliant luminosity goes out. The whining sound stops, and everything gets dark. But they do notice like a little glowing area underneath where the object was. So at this point, the guy starts firing live ammo into him. And I remember for years how many times Steve would tell me how he never forgot how as he's pumping ammunition, that biggest of the two creatures, I think it's just staring at him with those glowing green eyes. And apparently no effect on these things whatsoever. They turned around, start slowly walking back towards the woods. And at that point, they finally run back to the truck and go back to the farmhouse and tell the people what happened. They take them to a neighbor and they call the state police.
Mm.
So when the trooper arrives, he's out there and he's talking to the witness, and the witness is reluctant to even talk to him about it. And the trooper comments that they had a report of two similar creatures on the mountain the night before that he has to investigate the case.
Oh.
Now they go up in the troop car and they go up into the area where all this had taken place. And they're looking around. And what I was told was that they would take some steps, they would stop, they would hear some heavy tracks, some heavy footsteps. It would go on a little further, and it would stop. They would move. It would move.
What
they told me was that the area where the object had been on the ground was self-luminescent and glowing, about 100, maybe 150 feet in diameter. The farm animals up there wouldn't go anywhere near it. He said that he shined his flashlight beam into it. You could barely see the beam. He said it was bright enough that if he had a newspaper, he said he could have sat down within that glowing area and read the newspaper coming off from the glow of the light. And so anyhow, as they're walking around looking for evidence, they're both getting apparently a little nervous. And the trooper would never confirm this part of the story. But Steve, until he passed away, always stuck with the story, and I believe he was likely telling the truth. And what Steve said, what happened was, as they're walking along, they hear this sound in front of them. And anyhow, the trooper shined his flashlight ahead, and there's a fence line there. And what happened was the flashlight beam hit what appeared to be the largest of the two creatures. It's about 10 feet away from them. And Steve had one bullet left in his rifle, and he fired at this thing. And he said this creature charged towards them, and it kind of, when he hit it, he said it kind of rocked back and forth. like it was losing its balance, and then it charged towards the fence and hit the fence. At that point, they both jumped into the car and left the area and went back to the barracks. And when they went back to the barracks, both the trooper and the witness were taken to two separate rooms and separately interviewed about what happened. And then the trooper called me and asked us to send up a team to that area. And when we got in the early morning hours, the glowing area was gone. Mm. The animals still wouldn't go near it. The radiation levels were normal. And so that's the basic of the story, even though there was other odd things began to happen. But that was the case that really made it pretty clear that there was a lot more to this than we understand. And one thing I wanted to mention before we get any further into the case that indicated to me that Bigfoot may not be a normal flesh and blood animal. So a couple of things I want to really talk about is, one, you know, we're talking about these cases with UFOs and Bigfoot at times being seen together. So here's what I want to stress. One, of the thousands of UFO cases I've investigated, I've felt for many, many years that it's very likely that there's more than one origin for the unknown category of UFOs. After you eliminate all the cases we can explain, there's that percentage of cases you cannot easily dismiss. My feeling is that, one, that some of these may well be extraterrestrial, some could be unknown natural phenomena, and some, for a better term, could be interdimensional.
Absolutely.
They appear to be physical, but here's the interesting thing. In some UFO cases, we have, even in daylight, and some were very close range, we have these objects that suddenly physically appear and disappear. In some cases, they physically change from one form into another. And something that happened a number of years ago, there was at least one case where there was a group of people, and only a few within that group could see the object hovering overhead, and the other people couldn't see it. And as I began to look into the background of witnesses over the years, it began to make me wonder, did certain people have certain abilities that they're able to perceive certain phenomena that other people can't? Or could it be that the phenomena is attracted to certain individuals that have certain unusual abilities?
There's well, that's interesting.
Unanswered questions. The second thing is, the point I'm trying to make is, I'm not suggesting that that Bigfoot and UFOs are extraterrestrial. I don't know for sure what they are. All I know is we have some of these cases, and because they're so unusual, I can't dismiss it. I mean, as part of being a researcher, my position has been to go out to document the information and let the people know what we found. I don't have the answers. And, you know, so many people, I learned this so many years ago, a lot of people in the UFO field don't want to associate UFOs with Bigfoot. And, of course, we know that there are many in the Bigfoot field who don't want to even take on any case where people report strange lights or strange objects.
Oh, I know, right, right, right. But how can you not when you get reports like this?
Say it again?
Well, and I think you're going there. How can you not when you start getting reports like this? And that's what I wanted to talk to you about because of that.
Well, you know, the whole thing is when you're dealing with any subject, any type of incident, you've got to look into all aspects of the incident.
Absolutely.
You can't just eliminate certain details because they don't want to fit into your own perspective or thought pattern.
Yes.
And my position is, again, I don't know what we're dealing with, but there's something going on out there, and we need more and more people to look into it to try to find some answers. But one thing, again, is most UFO sightings have nothing to do with Bigfoot. Most Bigfoot sightings have no relationship with strange lights or UFOs, but they exist. And I've been in touch with researchers from late the 1970s from throughout the world and many parts of the country. And it's not just in Pennsylvania. These cases are known to have happened in many, many other parts of the country. And a lot of the researchers over the years contacted me and said, yeah, we're aware of the reports, and I've had cases like this, but I'm reluctant to publish it because I don't want to get in trouble or being ridiculed from my peers. And, I mean, this goes back to at least going back to Beyond Slate back in the 70s, who was investigating in California, who investigated a case like this in California. There are many other investigators I know, Nick Redfern, and so many others, Juan Strickler from Phantoms and Monsters. They hear these reports. Many others do as well. And because it's so strange, we still need to look into these and try to figure out what's going on. But
yes, and I'm sure you're going to get. I'm sure you're going to get more and more of those. As I was saying, that I've talked to people in Alabama, in Florida, Texas, saying the same kinds of things to me. And let me just ask you, with your expert advice, your expert thought, your theory, you yourself, I know you get fact and fact and fact and fact, and you put those together. I get that. I understand that. I love that about you. Let me ask this, though. When your group of people get together later and go, oh, my gosh, you know, wow, what do you think? I mean, you have to sit around and say, what do you think? How do you explain the red eyes, the disappearing, the lights, the fears? How do you explain it? You, who has not seen anything for yourself, but have heard event after event, story after story. Come on, Stan, I want your thought.
Well, the whole thing is, my thoughts are based on a lot of years of accumulating a lot of data.
Right, right.
You saw the patterns of what was going on. You have all these different individuals, and many of them were very credible, and many of them were, you know, professionals, you know, scientific people with scientific backgrounds, educators, people from all walks of life reporting these things but they're from widespread areas. And you got to remember, back in the 70s, we didn't have the internet. We didn't have ways to get a lot of this kind of information. So a lot of this was very not well known whatsoever. So you had the patterns, you had the physical evidence showing up at the scene of similar type of tracks, and that brings up to something else. You know, a lot of what you're talking about, could there be more than one type of creature involved? I keep an open mind to all possibilities until we have a body that we can study one. But a lot of people are unaware that, for example, Pacific Northwest in California, going back many, many years, areas where you have your typical five-toed footprints, they also have found three-toed footprints.
Yeah.
It's the same thing back here in Pennsylvania. And to add to the mystery, one of the lectures I do, it shows a various different castings of other tracks which have shown up. These are credible cases. These are not the hoax cases we've eliminated. But it's as though we're dealing with a phenomena that can take on almost any form it wants to, as strange as it sounds.
And I've also heard about, in recent cases too, and in the past, of men in black being a part of this. After some sightings have occurred, they have seen men in black type characters that we all, you know, assume are the men in black, but black SUVs entering areas where these sightings have occurred and talk has been talked. Have you heard about men in black, the black SUVs, things like that, yourself?
Yes, I have. I've had incidents over the years where it appeared that some mystery men, possibly government, was involved in some cases. But so
that's interesting.
That October 25th case of the UFO landing, okay? Many, many years after that incident, especially important cases, we tried to keep in touch with witnesses, follow-up investigations over the years. Well, many years later, that happened in 73, during the 1980s, on one of our follow-up investigations with that fellow Steve, we had never conducted any hypnosis. Okay, so anyhow, years later, we're talking to him about the possibility of possibly using hypnosis, and he looks at myself and my associate, George Lutz, who is now deceased, and he says to us, "Why do you want to hypnotize me again?" And we looked at each other because we knew we had never
hypnotized
him. So he said, tell us that back at
Hold that thought. Don't tell us what he said yet. Let's come back. We got to take a break. And then you tell us what that was, okay? Stan Gordon is with us. We're talking about Bigfoot and seeing if, are they ET? Are they extraterrestrial? What are these things? Looking forward to seeing if we can't connect the dots here. Connie Willis on Coast to Coast AM. Happy holidays from Connie Willis here at Coast to Coast AM. In for George Norrie. He's enjoying the holiday weekend. I hope you are as well. He'll be back on Sunday night. Before that, tomorrow night, you can tune in to Dave Schrader. He's got some interesting guests on tomorrow. You want to know who they are? Well, check it out at thecoasttocoastam.com. You can find out all sorts of great information that's coming up in the future and has happened in the past. So, I love this night. We have Stan Gordon in. We're talking about Bigfoot, if he's extraterrestrial or not, if it's a he or a she or what or if. We're on the edge of our seats right now because, well, just hang on and stay on the edge of your seats too with us and find out what he's got to tell us next about somebody was hypnotized asking questions before somebody. You know what? Just hang in there with us on Coast to Coast AM. Stan Gordon is coming up for you next. Coast to Coast AM, Connie Willis here in for George Norrie. Happy holidays to you, and back into action with Stan Gordon. Right before we left off, we were talking about Men in Black being a part of the Bigfoot phenomenon. Now, Stan, you were saying that some guy you were talking to, you had asked him about, you know, for I guess one of your first times to say, hey, how about if we hypnotize you? And this guy said, are you going to do this again?
Yeah, so that's going back to that incident we mentioned earlier with the state trooper and the multiple witness UFO landing and the two Bigfoot in the field.
Oh,
so
okay.
Years later, with a follow-up investigation in the 80s, we're talking to the witness about the possibility of doing hypnosis, and he looked at us and said, why do you want to do it again?
Whoa.
My associate and I looked at each other because we know we never hypnotized him. So he goes on to tell us that within a week or two after the incident, that these two men came to visit him. Well, he always thought it was somebody from my research group because we had spent many meetings and got together with him many times after that event because it was so important to do more follow-ups. Anyhow, the interesting thing is the one fellow was in a dark suit. The other fellow was in Air Force uniform.
Oh.
And they were there, and they asked him many, many questions, and they wanted him to go over and describe all the details of what he saw. During that time, the Air Force officer had a briefcase with him. He opened it up and had numerous photographs to show Steve of both UFOs and Bigfoot. And I remember Steve telling me that one of the Bigfoot pictures was of a large, hairy creature, I believe it was from Georgia. It was climbing over a fence and carrying a dead pig under its arm.
Whoa.
And they wanted to know if it looked similar to the creatures that he saw. And they also wanted him to point out any photographs of the UFOs to look similar to what he saw. And then they asked him about the fact that they wanted to hypnotize him and they wanted to get his permission, in which he apparently okayed it, and they did hypnotize him. And they told him that they would be hearing from them again, which he never did. And, of course, I did try to follow up. Of course, the Air Force was already officially out of UFO research in the early 1970 when they officially shut down Project Blue Book. So there was no indication, I mean, at least on record, of it being somebody from the Air Force. So who these mystery men were, of course, we don't know. And why were they involved and interested in such an important case?
Ooh, I'm just freaking out here because I think, I don't know, I've heard a lot of evidence like you're talking about, but I guess you're right about the percentage of UFO Bigfoot related is smaller than, of course, just a Bigfoot sighting. But, you know, let me just throw something at you. Okay?
Sure.
Can you go with me on here? Can you go with me on this one? Okay. So I've kind of got a theory. I want you to tell me, because I think you've studied this probably more than a lot of people I know. All right, so let's say Bigfoot is E.T. Let's just say it's a possibility that Bigfoots are like Wookiees, and they're down here mining the planet for gold or whatever else they need. You know, they're in areas that there's always a lot of caves. There are in areas where gold would be found. I know that's a very important element. So what if that's the case, and they're down here mining, and what if maybe they're actually even protecting Grace? Come on, maybe that's where the lights come from. I don't know. It's fun to think about. It's fascinating. Nobody can say yay or nay to that, so let's have an interesting conversation about that. Why not?
Well, many, many different theories out there, and I can tell you this. Pennsylvania and many of the areas where there was a lot of Bigfoot activity, there was a lot of caves and mines. But we did search those caves and mines, looking for evidence, looking for the fact that maybe these things were staying in there for a period of time. We never found any evidence suggesting
Nothing.
That whatsoever.
Nothing.
And but it's one of many theories. There have been alleged cases of the Grays, and allegedly in the accompaniment of a Bigfoot. And I know there were other investigators that had other cases of objects. These are going back to, 70s, 80s, where there was objects seen and some type of Bigfoot creature was reported inside the craft. And other investigators had looked at those cases as well. You know, there may well be a lot more data out there about these cases that we don't know about. So while there's so few that have come to public attention, there may very well be a lot of other information out there. A few years ago, I was asked to speak at the McMinnville, Oregon UFO conference out there, and that's right in the middle of Bigfoot territory. And I gave a lecture on this particular topic. And I figured, well, I'm probably going to get a lot of ridicule from some of the researchers out there. It was just the opposite. So many of the prominent Bigfoot researchers from that area contacted me or talked to me there and said, we are so glad you brought this up because the same thing is happening out here. The trails or tracks disappear. People allegedly shot at them, they disappeared. But they said, we're so reluctant to talk about it because we don't want to be ridiculed. So there may be much more than this we understand.
Well, let me ask you this. If we're in a community, a subdivision, wherever we are, and we, oh my gosh, there's some man and he's running around the neighborhood and he's scaring kids and he's got a gun and he's hiding out in the woods or behind somebody's house or something, you know, the police would come and there'd be a manhunt, correct? So why is it when somebody says, oh my gosh, there was a 9-foot creature with glowing green eyes or red eyes in the window, looking inside the window, and you get two or three witnesses at the same time, you know, at the same area. Why is there not a manhunt for this? Why is there not a manhunt for that?
Well, interestingly, during the events of 73 and 74 out here, in some cases, there was a lot of that type of local activity going on. Not all to the happiness of the local officials, because there were some near panic situations as these cases were unfolding. I mean, when these things were going on back here in the 70s, the newspapers locally were carrying this very, very thoroughly. I mean, it was front page for days of many local papers, and lots of people were seeing these things, and there were even some, like, little vigilante groups going out trying to find these things.
It's like a Scooby-Doo adventure, isn't it?
Yeah, so, I mean, this kind of things were taking place much more different back in the 70s than what we deal with today.
And what's bad is everybody didn't have a smartphone with them. They didn't have, you know, all these cameras on them the whole time where they could have taken hopefully some pictures. So I hope that a band of these sightings happens again with a lot of people with smartphones around them. So you also mentioned some other cryptids that have been seen: black panthers, thunderbirds, winged humanoids, which is, by the way, probably what would freak me out the most, I think.
Very interesting. But before you get into that, you may want me to tell you about the case that indicated to me that Bigfoot was not flesh and blood.
Bring it on. Bring it on. Let's go.
So anyhow, as these cases are continuing to occur, 73 and 74, some other very odd cases, again, come to our attention. February 6, 1974, back up in the mountains of Ohio, up near Ohio Pile in Fayette County. Your listeners will remember, some of your listeners will remember this period of time. There was gas rationing going on. There was a big national trucker strike. There was some shootings going on across the country. In Pennsylvania, because of what was happening, the National Guard and the state police were patrolling together. They both responded to this incident. I couldn't get gas in the next morning, so I couldn't get up to the site to early the next morning to investigate it. But anyhow, the story basically is this. Deep in the woods, deep in the mountains of Fayette County, here's this woman that lived there all her life, knew animals very well, and she's sitting there in a little cabin home, and everything's normal watching TV when she hears this commotion on her front porch. She had a small pile, I think, pop cans out there. Something was rattling the pop cans. She figured there had been a pack of wild dogs that had been coming through that area. So she figured these dogs were back. So she decides, I'm going to grab my shotgun and just shoot over the head of the dogs and scare the dogs away. So she grabs her shotgun and loads one chamber. And she makes her way over to the wall. And she turns on the switch to light the porch. She walks over to the door and opens up the door to walk out on the front porch. And she steps out. And 6 feet away from her,
Oh,
It's
no.
this huge hairy creature with its arms, it's 7 feet tall, with its arms straight up over its head. And what's interesting is, in the many interviews I did with her, she never ever called it a Bigfoot. She said it was a great big hairy ape.
Oh.
So here's this thing 6 feet in front of her. What does she do? She fires right into it.
Oh, you go,
She says
girl.
there's this,
Wow.
she says there's this bright flash of light,
Whew.
like a bright strobe on a camera, and it disappears right in front of her. So that's
Oh.
not the end of the story. So her
Oh.
in-laws lived 100 feet away. They heard the gunshot. They called and asked her what she's shooting at, and she explains to him. The son-in-law grabs his pistol, and he starts making his way up towards the cabin. He sees a figure in the dark running up the road. As he gets closer, he said he's surrounded by what looked like several hairy people with eyes like coals of fire, and starts shooting at them randomly and runs into the cabin. At about the same time, here's this large glowing object with flashing lights on. He said, like a big Christmas ornament hovering over the woods at the same time.
Oh my,
They called the
wow.
state police because they were scared to death. And by the time the trooper and the National Guardsman got up there in the middle of the mountain, whatever was there was gone. But I talked to the main investigating officer, and he told me something very unusual happened up there, and he based that on how the animals were reacting. And that's something I have seen in many cases over the years, especially during that time. You can fool people, you can't fool the animals.
That's
And
absolutely correct.
in so many cases, even the most ferocious dogs, when they're close to these Bigfoot creatures, they're like completely paralyzed. They won't bark, they don't move, they'll shake, they'll cower, they'll hide wherever they can. And even sometimes their eating habits change, and even 2, 3 days later, they won't even eat properly. Other animals, domestic and farm animals, quite often will respond similarly as well when these things are close by. So you can't fabricate that. That's something I have seen myself.
Wow. Wow. Well, what happens to these people that have been traumatized like that? I mean, their entire perspective. I know mine's changed along the way when I've seen things, but these people, to have one that close to you and you shoot at it and then it disappears, what do they think now? What do they preach to other people, or what do? They just stay in the house at all times and never leave again? What are they like now? How's it changed their lives?
Well, I deal with this quite often. It's not just with Bigfoot cases, but even close UFO cases, other cryptids, other strange events. So many of the witnesses I deal with are just normal people, many of them who never believed in such phenomena till they had their own personal experience. And for so many of them, it's a life-changing event. So many of these people, and many of them I kept in touch with for years, and I still do even today. And some of these witnesses, I mean, their lives have been dramatically changed since that day, because they still cannot conceive the fact that they actually saw what they saw. I mean, I've talked to hunters who spent years and years in the woods who never saw anything till that one day when they confronted a Bigfoot, and they never went. One guy told me, he said, "I never went back in the woods again." And I mean, these
Yeah.
are life-changing experiences for people.
They are. I've seen many lives change. Some of the Bigfooters I've got to be out there with are like Keith Tyler and Pat Rance and Willie Douglas and Mark Green, and some really nice people that some of the other Bigfooters out there, they're going to know who they are. And they have a different perspective in life. They look at things differently. And by the way, they want to protect these creatures. They're not out to shoot them. And they're very cautious, of course, who they tell their stories to, but also who goes along with them in the future, because they don't want somebody that's just going to tote a gun and try to shoot one. They absolutely try to protect these animals themselves and keep it quiet so other people won't go do any harm whatsoever. And they also, of course, want to keep doing their own research. So, wow, bottom line, Stan, with you, and I know you have tons more stories, but bottom line with you, what are your thoughts? What are your thoughts?
Well, my thought is, after looking at the hundreds of Bigfoot cases over the years, I began to have to question why by now, if we're dealing with an animal, why don't we have more physical evidence? Why, after so many years of sightings in the United States and similar things being seen throughout the world, why by now don't we have a body? Why do we have more physical evidence? Something just doesn't make any sense here. And I've talked to so many people in the Bigfoot community in the last few years, and they're beginning to ask the same question. It doesn't make any sense. And one thing I've noticed in the last few years is that some Bigfoot researchers in different areas, while out searching for Bigfoot, didn't find any Bigfoot evidence, but they've confronted strange lights and objects in the woods in areas where there was a lot of Bigfoot activity. So these things are still going on. Phenomena still happening. As recent as early this year during the wintertime down in eastern Pennsylvania, when we were having some of those really big, like foot and a half snowstorms, there was apparently an outbreak of some Bigfoot activity down the eastern part of the state. And one woman I talked to, her and her friend were up in a mountain area, and there was some Bigfoot sightings going on up there. And one woman said she had her dog for years and years, and it wasn't until that one day when her huge dog was cowering behind her, growling, and in this huge fresh snow, here's this huge hairy creature taking long strides in the fresh snow. There's nobody anywhere around that area. The next morning, there's this huge track of footprints in the snow that does suddenly stop and disappear. So these things keep happening out there, and we just don't have all the answers as to what's going on.
I love talking to the people that actually have what they call a relationship with these, where they do, you know, I was talking about they give gifts and get gifts back, and they go back and forth about these gifts, and they have long-term relationships, they claim. And I love the way they're cautious, I guess. They're not totally afraid. But I don't know, you know, when I've been around myself, I felt a sense of intelligence was around me, and I felt that they were way more intelligent. The stealthiness of them, they think, and I just got the ambiance and the feeling of, wow, these things are way more intelligent than us. That's what I got from the ones that I experienced around me, and I was lucky enough to experience some things. And we can talk about that some other time, maybe later on with open lines that we're going to have in the next couple of hours. Stan, I really appreciate all the information you've given us, and I know that you've got more things to talk about, but you know what? People can get your books. They can go online and see what you've got to offer with everybody, because it's always fun. It's always neat to talk with you, and I know that the 50th anniversary of Kecksburg is coming up next year, so I know you're getting ready for that.
Oh, yeah, that's... very interesting. They'll have their big UFO festival out there in July next year, and that should be a big special event, so people can keep checking my website for updates on that. And yes, just really briefly, there has been a lot of interesting cases already this year. Bigfoot sightings, we've had an increase in Thunderbird sightings, those reports of those huge birds with those massive wingspans, especially in September. We had some interesting cases. One near Chinette was... a fellow in his backyard that afternoon, when he heard this really weird sound up in the sky, and he looked up to hear this strange animal sound. He said, like a rah, rah, rah. He said it was like a sound that he could only attribute if dinosaurs were still living today. And he looks up to see this huge, very black bird passing about 200 feet overhead. And he said this thing easily had at least a 12-foot wingspan. And other reports were coming in the next couple days as well. So we're having those reports and Black Panther sightings and other weird reports. So people from Pennsylvania, if you see anything, get in touch with us, please.
And what's your hotline number there? What's your website?
Well,
StanGordon.info.
StanGordon.info is the website. Email is paufo@comcast.net.
Thank you so much, Stan Gordon. It's so great to talk with you. Everybody, open lines coming up for you next here on Coast to Coast AM.